Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome to ABQ Connect. We're presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling. Bosky also provides plumbing, roofing, and restoration services. For service, call 444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. Carlos Griego, wonderful sponsor of the programming here on KNKT. Want to wish him and his family a Merry Christmas. And the same to all of our listeners. Thank you for joining us today. I have special guests, Dr. Stephen Collins, Dr. Gary Byers, and Larissa Lusco. And I learned this with you two guys, that when Larissa's here, you guys are here.
That's the deal.
Because Larissa, do you actually carry like a little whip or anything to get these guys in line when you're to get them here?
No, they're pretty good. They're pretty good.
If she doesn't do it, it doesn't happen. We just kind of wander around thinking about stuff, bumping into walls. And Larissa has to kind of get us going in the right direction.
I love it. I love it. Dr. Stephen Collins is the Director of Archaeology and Biblical History PhD program for Veritas International University School of Archaeology, and he's the Chief Archaeologist at the Tell al-Hammam excavation project in Jordan. That, of course, as we've talked about in previous programs, is the site of the ancient city of Sodom, and we're frequently talking about the Bible and all of the wonderful things that these two gentlemen have discovered in archaeology that really, really illuminates the historicity of the Bible. Dr. Byers is the Dean of the College of Archaeology and Biblical History for Trinity Southwest University, and he's the Assistant Director at Tell al-Hammam and Shiloh Excavation Sites. Larissa is the Dean of the College of Women's Studies and Christian Leadership at Trinity Southwest and Media and Donor Relations for Tell al-Hammam, and she is in charge of getting these two doctors to ABQ Connect. So that's quite a job. Hey, we're going to have fun today, because what we're going to be doing is talking about what many people consider to be the story of Christmas.
Are we going to ruin the Christmas story today? Is that what we're going to do?
Yeah, we're going to take a shot at it. Biblically speaking.
So I'm going to start here and say, Dr. Steve, is there historical evidence, first of all, outside of the Bible to support the birth and life of Jesus Christ?
Oh, absolutely. There are Roman sources, ancient Jewish sources, ancient pagan sources. There's all kinds of written sources that document that Jesus was in fact a real person with some pretty remarkable characteristics. Josephus even recognized that. Mm. So, so we have Tacitus, and we have Josephus, we have Suetonius. Who else do we have, Gary, right off the top of your head? Anyway, lots and lots of Roman writers, pagan writers, others.
Yeah, mentioned not Jesus, or then talks specifically about his followers.
So we have people like Julius Africanus. And his dispute with a pagan scholar, talking about the pagan scholar was trying to dismiss the idea that darkness covered the land at the time of Jesus' crucifixion, he's trying to dispel that as not a myth but an actual occurrence.
I'm trying to compare Jesus being born to anyone being born, and I don't know if the word is celebrity, but you have to have had a certain amount of celebrity, a certain amount of importance. Some miraculous things had to be evident in order for all the people to focus on Jesus.
It wasn't normal. I mean, when we were born, you and I and all of us, I mean, there probably weren't. When I was born, there probably weren't any angels hanging around, you know, celebrating. They're probably going, "Oh, this is the guy we heard about. We got to follow this guy around for the rest of his life, and he's going to make us miserable." But the angel thing, the shepherd thing. And the Magi, or as we anglicize it, the Magi, these kind of little off the edge, kooky astrologers from Persia or Babylon, who come trekking over the sand now they show them on camels, and that's probably right.
Yeah.
You don't go coming across the Arabian desert. You could come up over the Fertile Crescent on a donkey, but if you're going to cross the desert, which they probably did, if they're just moving west, cross the desert on a camel. So that's a pretty good
depiction. How many days would that take to cross the desert?
I would imagine it would probably take you weeks, a few weeks to do that.
And you're talking about not necessarily a real hot time of year, or was it 100 and plus degrees when they did this?
No, it would have been in the winter or spring.
Okay.
So it would have been a rather cool time of year. And the interesting thing about that is why in the world were they doing this? Mm. I mean, they had seen, did you see the star last night?
No, I didn't get
or
to see it.
Or the convergence of Jupiter and Saturn. And it was pretty cool. Yeah. Now, that could have been something like that, you know, that was they noticed something really weird in the sky.
Yes.
Some astronomical, astrological to them kind of sign that they said, this must be the time of the birth of the Jewish Messiah, predicted in the Old Testament scriptures, in the Jewish scriptures. Now, why would they think that? Because of a little fellow named Daniel. Remember, Daniel had become the champion of the magicians and astrologers and soothsayers of Babylon because he saved their butts, just to put it interestingly, in a modern way. You know, Nebuchadnezzar was about ready to toast all of those guys for giving him the runaround, not being able to do the dreams right and all that. Well, Daniel steps in and gets it all done. And Daniel had to be sort of a champion.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably sat with these guys and pointed out, and actually when he wrote his book, that it was going to be 180, I got to get it right now. I haven't said this in a long time. 183,880 days.
Very good.
Is that right?
That's close enough.
I knew there was a number in there. It was either the number of the speed of light, 186,000 miles a second, or that one. You know, I pulled that up. Anyway, 183,880 days, something like that. And guess what? It just so happened that was the predicted number of prophetic days to the coming of the Messiah. Well, here's how I think they did it. They looked at that date. They knew what the date was, but they wanted to get there at the time of his birth. They didn't want to come see him as an adult. They wanted to get there and welcome him into the world. So they probably counted back to an approximate date that they said, well, you know, what about kind of this? Let's give him 20, 25 years and let's back it up to this date. Well, guess what? When they saw that odd, very oddball occurrence in the sky, the Bethlehem star, whatever we want to call it, when they saw that, they looked at their date that they had chosen for the entrance of Messiah into the world, but that was the coming on the foal of a donkey, that he would enter into Jerusalem on the foal of a donkey, Zechariah 9:9, and they counted backward and they said, this must be it. This must be the time of his entrance into the world, his birth. So they took off from the east and headed west toward Bethlehem because they knew where he was going to be born.
But you get the impression from the story of the star in the Bible that the star was almost moving and leading them.
Well, they do that.
The star last
night.
I
haven't been out in the middle of the desert with a star leading me across. I've not had that experience.
Did you see it last night? It started up here, and then it moved to the west, and then also to the north. So it was moving from the southwest, and it was because the earth is turning.
Mm-hmm.
And so those stars are always moving. So every night they saw it moving, because those planets move in their circuits around the sun, just like the earth. So anyway, there's something going on there, and maybe it was planets or whatever, a comet or something, but we don't know. But, I mean, that's such a true story. Who's going to make up a story like that?
Yeah. Neat story.
You know, to make it right, we don't need crazy guys coming out of the East. They wrote about it because it happened.
So, Dr. Gary, been thinking about asking you this for 2 weeks. Was Jesus born in a barn?
That's the way I heard it, and that's the way it's always been at the plays, the church.
It was on my mantle my whole life.
That's right. You know, we're familiar with that. Well, you know, as a pastor for about 30 years, I every year had to, you had to get a series of Christmas sermons together. And 1 year, it's been about 40 years ago, I was reading to prepare for my Christmas sermons through the month of December, and I read an article that really ticked me off because it changed everything I've been teaching for at that time about 15 years. And I didn't pay attention to it that year, and I went ahead and did what I was going to do. But I went back to it later, and I was already engaged in archaeological research, and I read it again, and I said, you know, I think this is probably right. Hmm. So then it really took me back to the Christmas story. And, you know, there's no barnyard animals mentioned in the story. There's not even a reference to a barn.
Now, a manger, though, is a feeding trough, though.
Yes.
No doubt about that. Yeah,
a manger is a feeding trough. That's different than a barn.
Well, and people might have just already assumed as they, you know, put together the story that because there's a feeding trough, there's somehow a barn somewhere. But a barn wasn't even a tradition in that area, right?
A place to put animals, certainly they had such facilities. But there's in the story in Luke chapter 2, that's where you read it, mm-hmm. There's no reference to a barn or barnyard animals. There's no reference to an innkeeper or a quote from an innkeeper. And
oh, come on, time, I played the innkeeper.
I was a shepherd once. I was a star once, too. And none of that's in the story. In fact, by the time we're done today, I'm going to try to show you that there's no inn either. Mm. The only thing we have is, as you said, the manger. And we know archaeologically mangers were part of an everyday family house, and it was on the ground floor of a house, and on the upper floor they might well have a facility that they called a guest room. And I'm just going to real quickly cut to the chase. The Bible seems to say, in fact, it does say, that the Greek New Testament words, the finds from archaeology, that there was a manger on the ground floor of a house, and it would have been the same house that had a guest room that was full. And what's translated as in Luke 2:7 in the Christmas story, Luke uses the same word in chapter 22, the room for the Last Supper. Jesus says to go find the guest room, same word, kataluma. Go find the guest room where I may celebrate the Passover with my disciples. Interestingly enough, guest rooms, catalumas, were mentioned the first night of Jesus' life and the last night of Jesus' life. And they were sandwiched in there by Dr. Luke for a reason. And I don't know all the implications, but that was the deal. So there was a manger, mm-hmm. and there was a guest room, a cataluma, not an inn, but a guest room. And I think it's in the same house in Bethlehem. Mm.
Is the story enhanced? I mean, I've seen plays, again, at school. My kids went to Christian school, five of them, and I remember seeing a person playing the innkeeper and turning away the poor pregnant Mary. And, you know, it's like, well, God provided this little place for you to have a baby, and that mean innkeeper didn't even give you a priority. But see, the emphasis of that story is way different than what you're saying,
yeah.
The Bible.
And it's sort of like they got turned out in the cold,
yeah.
and they had to settle for not even a human habitat, place of human habitation. They had to settle for something like a barn or some kind of a lean-to somewhere with some animals collected, you know, where they fed the animals. But that's not what happened. And, you know, Gary was talking about it was a typical first century style Roman or Jewish type sort of middle class house, a family residence that had been part of Joseph's family for generations.
In Bethlehem.
Because why did they return to Bethlehem? Because
they have relatives there.
Because a decree had been issued,
oh, yeah,
and a census was going to be taken, mm-hmm. and they had to go for taxation purposes mm-hmm. back to their place of their family residence. So whose house was this?
Yeah, if They went back twice, it says in the text, Luke 2, if they went to the city of David, and it's Bethlehem. Now, in the Old Testament, the city of David was Jerusalem. But David was born in Bethlehem, and clearly in New Testament times, the city of David, they referred to it as Bethlehem. So that's Joseph's family, and Matthew chapter 1 and Luke chapter 3 both say that Jesus was of the family of David, King David. Joseph was Jesus' earthly legal father. And so Joseph, if things had gone right, Joseph should have been ruling on the throne of Israel as the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandson of David. But things didn't go that way, and I don't guess he was bitter about it, but they had to go home, and the ancestral home, the Davidic family ancestral home was there. And people say, well, you know, because of the thing with Mary, it was a little, you know, didn't look good. If one of the great, great, great grandsons of King David shows up with this lady and she's his wife, his legal wife, they're going to receive them with great joy. And that's where Jesus would have been born. I believe in the ancestral home of King David, Joseph's family. And if I'm right, the same house downstairs. In fact, maybe they got there and the upstairs room was already full of relatives for the taxation. And Mary says, Joe, I'm not going up there with all those people. We'll be fine down here.
Old women are going to fidget around me, and I'm not in the mood.
Yep. And so just clean out the hay down there, and we'll be just fine in the bottom level of the house. And I think that's where it was, which would mean Mary and Joseph weren't turned out into the cold by themselves. Jesus would have been born surrounded by family. Mm. Pretty cool thought. And doesn't make sense that God's going to make sure when his son enters the world, he's going to be surrounded by loving, caring family.
But it does make the flavor of the story a lot
sure
different.
Does
Do we
it.
Think when we rewrite stories for God that they're better?
Well, I don't think we're rewriting. I think that's exactly what the Bible indicates.
No, but I think Americans, we're enhancing the story as we go.
That could
These
well
things
be.
Kind of evolve out. You know, you add a little here, you tweak a little there, a little tradition rises up over here and over there, and eventually it all comes together and we get what we get. But it all goes, and I don't want to spoil people's Christmas.
I still have a nativity
by
set.
Suggesting that they actually read the text.
Yeah.
Yes.
Carefully and see what the Bible says, because what Gary's describing is precisely what the Bible describes as what we think of the Christmas story. Mm-hmm. So it was a very different scenario than the way we've always traditionally thought of it and reinforced it in churches, in all of our tableaus and all of our manger scenes and all of that. We've given credence to the tradition rather than looking at it from a scriptural point of view.
Well, I, for one, am encouraged that he was with that Jesus was born with his family and encouraged and surrounded by all of them. We're on the radio this afternoon with Dr. Stephen Collins, Dr. Gary Byers, and Larissa Lusko. We're going to be back with more about the Christmas story. We're going to find out about the Magi or the Magi when we come back. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
God is love. God's love is intrinsic. It is as essential to God as light is to the sun, as blue is to the sky, as wet is to water. You don't make water wet. It is wet. In all of these cases, the attribute is intrinsic to the object. Take great joy in your God. He loves you. Hey, this is Pastor Scott Thom of Cross Christian Fellowship. Connect with us at crossfellowship.org.
At Albuquerque Christian Children's Home, we believe that children are truly a gift from God. That's why we open our arms and our hearts to children who have been abused, neglected, or abandoned. Children who are hurting and scared. Although we have lots of love to give, caring also takes dollars. You can help provide a home for these children with us by making a tax-deductible donation online at acch4kids.org or by calling us at 898-5520. 2020 has been a challenge for all of us. Our children are growing up in a safe and secure Christian home because of your generous support. At this critical time, we need your support now more than ever. We receive no state or federal funding. Please consider a year-end donation to help us continue to provide a loving home for our children. Go to acch4kids.org and click on the Donate Now button or call us at 898-5520.
Gonset Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury. Don't ignore the pain and discomfort any longer. Schedule a consultation today at gonstead-nm.com or 505-884-8584.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Merry Christmas, everybody, in preparation and in anticipation of the wonderful Christmas season in the middle of a very difficult year. We are joined in the studio by Dr. Stephen Collins, Dr. Gary Byers, and Larissa Lusco. Dr. Collins and Dr. Byers are both archaeologists, have shared with us amazing things about Tell al-Hammam and the discovery of the ancient city of Sodom. Larissa is the dean of the College of Women's Studies and Christian Leadership at Trinity Southwest University, and she also coordinates the media and donor relations for Tell al-Hammam. I'm going to go to Larissa right now and ask you just a couple quick questions about how people can support what's going on. I know I talked to Dr. Collins off air when he walked in, and right now having another 2-month dig season at Tell al-Hammam is not real optimistic because of what's going on with COVID in Jordan. But more than ever, you need people to support that effort. There's some amazing scientific stuff coming out of there and has already been done and more to be done. Tell us about that.
Well, we first of all, you say how can they contribute or be a part of what's going on. On Saturday, January 23rd, we are going to have something called Dig Deep 2021, and it's a live streaming fundraising event. We are testing the waters for the first time, and we're going virtual, and we are inviting people from all over the world. We're going to have some incredible guest speakers. I can't tell you who, but it's going to be a great lineup. We're going to do virtual museum tours. We'll be having live cooking demonstrations of ancient recipes. Like, I'm talking something King David ate. What is that?
Yeah, we're going to do an Abraham kind of meal, a couple of those, and a Moses kind of meal, and a King David kind of meal.
So,
or pieces of them.
Yes. Lots of fun things. We're going to give you a tour of all three of our buildings, and it's going to be a great time. And so anyone is invited. But if you would like to give before the end of the year, you can text Dig Sodom 77977 and just type the words Dig Sodom, lowercase, space, doesn't matter. It's Dig Sodom and 77977, and it'll prompt you and walk you through the steps there.
And you do have an inner circle of people that support you, and they get maybe a firsthand glimpse at news before any of us do.
Yes.
And that's kind of fun.
And if you can go to digsodom.com and you can find out information on how to become a part of the inner circle. We'd love to have you.
And before we start again with the Christmas story, Dr. Collins, you have really been the one that spearheaded the Museum of Archaeology at Trinity Southwest University. And that resource is right in Albuquerque, right over on Jefferson. What's the address? 7600. So it's a couple blocks north of Calvary Church.
Yep. 467 meters from where we sit right here.
Yeah, there you go. And that's open, isn't it? I mean, is it open now? Can people come for tours even though we have...
Sure, just call ahead, you know, to make sure that, you know...
And we need to make sure that everybody has... the person that really runs all of this is Glenda. And you want to call her at 505-332-4253. Maybe your home school group. Maybe you're a teacher in the public schools.
And if you can't remember that very well, it's just 33 Bible.
33 Bible. 33 Bible. I always get mad because I can't keep track of that on the phone. There's three letters. You're asking for an intellectual exercise when you... I know, I'm pathetic. Terrible. A lot of information available to our listeners at trinitysouthwest.com and tallelhammam.com. I'm going to spell that. TALLELHAMMAM.com. And you really should take a look at the websites. The website's also digsodom.com. That's easier.
It is. That's why.
That's easier. I like easy. So let's get back to the Bible story. We've talked a little bit about Jesus was probably not born in a barn, a typical household. This was probably Joseph's family home and multiple people, maybe even generations living there. The person answering the door when Mary and Joseph knocked didn't open the door and go, "Sorry, Joe, we're full. See you later." That didn't happen. Right, Gary?
I agree. This was home. This was family. Now, how often they got there, Joseph would have been required as a Jewish man to go to the temple three times a year. Mm-hmm. And the temple was about 3 miles, maybe up to 5 miles from Bethlehem. So if he got that far from Nazareth, he probably stopped home and saw family on a fairly regular basis, whether he, Mary came with him or not, or those early years without Mary, and then later on with Mary and baby Jesus, young Jesus. So that was ancestral home, and they would expect him to be there, and they would have received him. He was the great-great-great-great-grandson of King David.
Yes.
He was special.
He was absolutely special. Is the accurate story, Dr. Collins, about the birth and life of Jesus more rich than the, I'm going to call the cultural Americanized version?
Oh, always. I mean, whatever you can get into or kind of see behind the text and get into the culture and the practices of both the Jewish people of the day and, of course, the Roman people of the day and even the scoundrels of the day, like King Herod, mm-hmm. who was part of that story. It all makes it richer because it's a total cultural experience that we're looking at here. And, of course, this didn't come out of the clear blue. The Jews had a predicted Messiah, mm-hmm. that their Hebrew scriptures had predicted and had them looking for generations. And now all of this was culminating, and it was not without. Of course, the enemy is always hanging out too, and there is always opposition. And we get a glimpse of that in the book of Revelation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I get the idea, talking to both of you, that the Magi, I know I'm saying that wrong, but most people would understand
that. That's the way
we do it. Yeah. Yep. The Magi were not Jews, but they were familiar with the Hebrew scriptures. And I find that fascinating because you two are familiar with writings, yep. from many different cultures, non-Christian writing, et cetera.
Yes, and you have to ask yourself, well, how did they, these soothsayers, astrologer guys from, and now some say maybe from Persia, but probably from Babylon, how did they get hooked up with the Hebrew scriptures? How did they get hooked up with the book of Daniel, which allowed them to count the days from the issuing of a decree of Artaxerxes to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until the coming of the Messiah was, 480 years, blah, blah, blah. You count that out to 183,880 days, and they had counted it. But how did they get connected with that? Here's a little bit of the background. People don't think that the Jewish population, the Jewish community population in Babylon, mm-hmm. at the time of Jesus' birth, was larger than the Jewish community of Jerusalem.
Hmm. I never thought about that, ever.
Remember, most of the Jews who had been deported off to Babylon by Nebuchadnezzar the Great never returned. Those families, if you look at the numbers of the families, the actual physical numbers of the families who returned after the Babylonian captivity to places like Jerusalem and other cities, it was not large numbers. Mm-hmm. So many of they had built, spent three generations really in captivity building a community in Babylon. And still today, by the way, there are Jewish inhabitants all over Mesopotamia.
But they're persecuted.
Well, they are. Mm-hmm. But how'd they get there? They didn't move there in recent times. They've been there since ancient times.
Right. And they consider where they live home.
Yes, yes.
So, anyway, these Magi had plenty of opportunities to engage with Jewish rabbis.
Yeah.
And to understand the coming of the Messiah.
Gary, was there a tradition or was it a cultural norm to celebrate the birth of a child similar to what is happening with Jesus, but you're not going to have magi visit just a normal child and bring gifts and all of those things.
And usually, as Steve said, angels aren't usually there to announce anybody's birth. Maybe just warn people, not the kind of celebration. Yeah, the birth of a child was always a big deal. And sorry, Larissa, but they liked male childs even better. And so to have the birth of a boy to carry on the family name and tradition was a big deal. And so just the expectation and probably the discussion about all the ladies in the family, you know, what's it going to be and the way she looks and the way this thing, you know, they had their ideas of which it would be, but a little boy would be a big deal. And so when the shepherds show up in town, all they were told was this baby was born and they laid him in a manger. And that probably was a little weird. That probably didn't normally happen. Although a manger would make a nice, you know, little crib. You can see that. So they went in town and they probably just started asking around. And has there been a baby born?
They may have heard the hoopla.
Yeah, that's right.
There may have been some celebrating and some dancing and singing going on.
Shooting guns off in the air.
Yeah, that must be it.
But I think most of us think the Bible story is one where these poor people have had no attention from anybody, totally rejected, and they're having this baby all by themselves off in a barn somewhere. And that's not really true.
I don't think that's what fits the culture or the text, either one.
Yeah. Why did an angel go out into the country and talk to the shepherds about this baby being born?
You know, shepherds were not respected, well respected in Jewish society. They were considered the lowest of the low class and weren't really considered to be people you could trust. And so shepherds were not well received in general society. And so the symbolism that God sent his angels, not to Jerusalem and to King Herod, not to the temple at Jerusalem, sent them to shepherds who nobody else could really appreciate. And they're the invited guests when Jesus is born.
Yeah, that's interesting because in all of antiquity, even more remote antiquity, going back to the time of Abraham, and even Moses, and even down in Egypt, most city dwellers, most folk who were more refined and wearing the linen, you know, wearing the finer clothes, thought of shepherds as stinky, smelly people because they hung around sheep.
They were stinky, smelly people.
They were stinky, smelly, and they did not. You couldn't even bring those sheep into Egypt. They were illegal. They were stinky, and they hated shepherds. And so even today, in the Bedouin who keep the sheep, who are out in the fields and in their tents, are not liked very well or tolerated very well by the rest of society. They keep these people at a distance. And even the farmers get really upset when the shepherds show up in their neighborhood. Yeah. And we've seen a few conflicts even with our people around our dig site. So the shepherds in antiquity and still today are not, they're on the bottom of the bottom of the social ladder.
We've got to say thank you to some of our sponsors. They've been with us all year long. Really appreciate them very much. We'll be back with more about the Christmas story. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
At Krecker Law, we believe in making things right when things go wrong. If you are injured, you shouldn't have to go it alone. You deserve someone who will listen to you and fight for you. We believe that you deserve to protect your future, protect your family, and protect your loved ones. We believe in challenging insurance companies and standing up to bullies. We believe that David can beat Goliath. 843-7777.
The Krecker Law Firm. Righting wrongs, protecting your future. TheKreckerLawFirm.com. The CRECCA Law Firm.
You want a glass of water. What do? You walk over to the sink, you turn on the faucet, and you pour a glass of water. Simple, right? Not when you live in the poorest areas of Asia. A woman must walk an average of 3.7 miles just to find water that's free from disease. She fills a jug till it weighs about 44 pounds and then carries it on her head back to her village. And she does this every day of her life. That's if she can find clean water. But now there's hope. Gospel for Asia is building Jesus Wells. A Jesus well provides pure, clean water for an entire village and opens the way to talk about the living water of Jesus. This Christmas, give the gift of water. Donate a Jesus well and bless an entire village. Call 855-572-4628. That's 855-572-4628. For other ways to give, please visit knkt.com and click the Christmas Critter Campaign banner.
Recent research has found that Google searches for the word prayer have surged worldwide alongside the spread of the novel coronavirus. In fact, Google Trends data shows that the search intensity for prayer doubles for every 8,000 COVID-19 cases. But is there a right way or a more effective way to pray? Here's best-selling author Kay Arthur.
Where the battle's raging, we're to be on the front lines. On the front lines on our knees, on the front lines standing in the full armor of God.
Kay's book, Lord, Teach Me to Pray in 28 Days, offers simple but powerful instruction on how and what to pray and what to expect when you do. And it's our way to say thank you when you give a gift of $25 or more today to help keep this ministry on the air. Give online securely at connectwithskip.com/offer or call 800-922-1888.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
I think in the future, I just have to leave the mic open and record everything we talk about off the air because it's so good. Gary, I want to ask you about Luke 2, verses 13 and 14, where it talks about the heavenly host. And I couldn't tell really from the scripture if that's the heavenly host singing praises to the newborn king to just the shepherds, or could everyone have heard that?
Yeah, the text says that the shepherds were out in the fields with their flocks. And so they wouldn't have been, Steve made comment, I don't know if it was on the air or off the air, but, you know, the shepherds were not well-received in town. They wouldn't be bringing their flocks in town. And so they're out in the fields, and some of them employed locally, some maybe from elsewhere. So they were out in the fields at night. They were guarding their flocks. You had to stay awake. You had to take care of your flocks because wild animals, and they would have some sort of a sheep pen to keep them in separately or all in one big group. So they're out there at night minding their own business, and God wants to announce the birth of his son to the world. And so of all the people, he goes to those shepherds, probably scared them to death. Mm. We don't know how far out of town. Could have been a mile, could have been half mile, could have been 2-3 miles. And so I'm sure that in Bethlehem, there was probably some brightness to it. The glory of God shone, so some sort of brightness. And, you know, I don't suppose angels need microphones and don't know how many there were. But I would imagine that some people saw some brightness, heard some sound, wondered what was going on, but they either were preoccupied with other things or they were in town celebrating the birth of the baby themselves already. So it was done for the shepherds, but other people might have been able to hear it. It's amazing when we're kind of tuned in what God does, we do get to hear, you know, when we're kind of paying attention.
Dr. Collins, I'm hearing all kinds of focal points of the text. We're talking about shepherds. You already kind of called them stinky people. Sheep are not especially fragrant animals.
No, they are not.
But I think about the other text in the Bible where we're referred to as sheep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how can we be
very accurately so?
Yeah. How can we be encouraged by the way God is bringing these non-celebrity people, these people that are, I'll just say, normal. You know, they don't have any special political position, they don't have any social status, but that's who God throughout the Old and New Testament uses to do amazing things.
Yeah, I love the sheep analogy, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because a sheepfold, and remember Jesus said, I am the fold of the sheep. Mm-hmm. Well, how so? Because if you look at a little shepherd who had, you know, you could have anywhere from, say, 20 to 200 sheep, mm-hmm, in a typical flock. But at night, in the ancient world particularly, not so much today because you don't have a lot of wild animals. But you would want to get these sheep at night into a protective enclosure.
Yep.
And they had, these were caves sometimes. Sometimes they were more like rock-built corrals surrounded by a rock wall with a small door. And typically this shepherd would stand with one foot on one side of that little enclosure of that door and one foot on the other, and the sheep would pass between his legs as they came through, each one individually. He'd feel them, see if there were any parasites or ticks or anything like that. He'd look at their legs and he'd look at how they walked, make sure they weren't injured in some way. So he would tend to each individual sheep as it came into the fold. Everybody gets a good look. And there was a love. That shepherd loved the sheep. And they knew his voice. And if shepherds brought their flocks together, multiple flocks, and those flocks would intermingle, what would happen is when they decided to part toward the evening and go back to their sheepfolds, the shepherds would all stand at a distance, separated from one another, and call out their own flocks. And the sheep knew the voice of their own shepherd. And I've seen this done today.
Yeah.
I mean, they will do the same thing. But on the other, so the sheep get taken care of by the shepherd.
Well, when you say they know
his
voice.
And they wouldn't survive otherwise.
What does that mean? That he says, come on, come on, come on, and all the sheep just line up and follow him?
Yeah, here they come. They will separate out and go. They will follow their shepherd. They will not follow the voice of somebody else.
So recognizing the voice, and probably each shepherd had his own little call. I've heard the shepherds, they seem to each have their own little call, and the sheep are familiar with that call.
And they're pretty good with rocks, too.
Yeah.
You know, if you got one that wants to go that direction, they'll pick up a little rock and, boom, just hit him on the rear end with it. And he'll kind of stun around and spin around and come on down. He can't hurt a sheep with a rock, you know, with all that wool. But you just kind of pop him with a little stone. And so they know how to do their thing. And Jesus does that with us, right? We're sheep. Every once in a while, we get off the path there, and all of a sudden, he just pick up a little stone and pop us with it.
All we like sheep have gone astray. We've turned everyone to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all.
Let's talk about the reason Jesus was born and how he took the iniquity of us all, because that's really why we're celebrating his birth.
He didn't come to be a good example, although he was the greatest example, to show us how to live. He came to die for us because we were incapable of pulling it off on our own. And that was the plan from the beginning. And he had some knowledge, some understanding of that beyond his years and his age. And he came because we are pathetic, and he came to help us out and hook us up. We just have to admit we're as pathetic as we really are. That's where we get hung up. I'm really not that bad. I think I might be good enough to get to heaven. None of us are. And those of us that have met Jesus, we're still not that good. And we're still in the process of transformation if we're working at it.
Have you experienced the more you know about God? Because you two know a lot more about the scriptures than I do. Do you feel farther away from him the more you know about him?
I'm not sure how to address that exactly. Here's the way I feel about it. The more you know, the dumber you feel. Because the more you know, the more you see that you don't understand. We may know a lot, but we don't understand a lot. The more you as you open each page, as reality unfolds for us, as we start to understand a little bit more about God, as those pages begin to turn, or he's an omnidimensional God. As we begin to peek around the corners of his many dimensions, it gets more mysterious and more mysterious all the time. And which it becomes a little bit mind-blowing, where you feel, number one, you feel insignificant. Number two, you feel dirty. There's the sheep thing again. And the brighter the light, you know, sometimes I dust the piano and it looks great. But when the morning light comes in horizontally, the sunlight, it looks like you could plant potatoes. And I just dusted it yesterday.
Yeah.
But that's how it is. The more we see, the more we open up to the light of Christ, the worse we look. And it's like, you know, you have an old 1990s television like I do, you know. And someday we've been talking about upgrading, you know, like to a new HD TV.
Wow. Since the 90s.
But I've seen other people's HD TV and the amazing resolution of it. But that's how it is. The closer we get to God in a relationship, the brighter is His light. And the higher the resolution on our sin. And so we think, wow, I look pretty good. You know, I've been walking with God. I look pretty good. And then He ratchets up the resolution. And we go, oh, my goodness.
You know, it's funny that you're
dirtier than I thought I was.
I can really see this because I've noticed that, you know, movie stars and television stars are all these really beautiful people. HD is not complimentary to some of these people.
No, and most of that is called makeup.
Yeah, but all of a sudden you're starting to see movie stars as just people. I kind of like it. I think it's, especially during COVID, I do have one thing I have to say about COVID, and you two haven't broken this rule, neither has Larissa, but I'm frustrated with all of these Zoom meetings and stuff with people that wake up in the morning and they don't even comb their hair. Come on. You still have a bathroom. You can comb your hair.
I haven't combed my hair for years.
Yeah, I heard somebody speaking the other day, and they made a real point. They were talking about, you know, it wasn't this, but it was kind of like the, you know, the seven habits of highly successful people or whatever, you know. But he said the number one thing on his list was to make your bed.
make your bed.
Get up and make your bed. Yeah. And get into those routines. But, you know, we don't do stuff right all the time. As good as we think we can do it, as the best we can do is never good enough if we're trying to impress God. God is never impressed with us. He loves us, but I think He does more head shaking and eye closing and eye rolling at us than anything else. But that's why Jesus came.
The whole
point of Jesus was to get us into a relationship with God so that God could smile on us through His Son.
Today, what does God want from us?
Well, you know, God doesn't need anything.
No, but He is blessed.
But he is a person. Mm. And we are persons after His image, so we share some of His likeness. But part of that is that He's a personal God. He's a personal God that wants to be in a personal relationship with us. And I think we deny God that more than anything else in our life. Two things people don't do well, or I find that I don't do well. Number one is bring glory to God. I mean, that's kind of what we're supposed to do.
Yep.
Kind of a basic fundamental thing about human beings, to glorify God, or to, you know, to just make people aware of Him and to exalt Him through our life. We don't do that very well, mostly. But the other thing we don't do very well is have a moment-by-moment, personal, sort of talking, walking relationship with Him. We get busy. It's real easy to go to the grocery store, and the last thing on our mind is God when I'm looking at the tomato paste. Mm. You know, it's so easy to get sidetracked and to get off here and there away from God. And that's why those quiet times and to set aside time specifically to sit before God and let Him shine the light, but let us return the love.
Dr. Collins,
and
I think
a real hard time with that.
I still
ask myself that question, you know, how do I love God? God, how do I love You? I don't know if I do. I think I do, but how do I express that? You know, how do I gush that? How do I emote that? I sometimes have a problem with that, but we do the best we can. We do the best we can.
I don't know how all three of you feel about this, but I have five children. There's times when my kids didn't think Dad was very important. They're older now, so they do. And when they call you just to say hello, that's really a blessing. Yes. I have to imagine that's how God feels when we call him, to just say hello and just to talk to him, just to pray.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I have that experience. You know, when the child calls, when the child is no longer a child, you know, they're yeah. almost as old as I was not too long ago, I think. But your first inclination as a human being, my first inclination is, oh, what do they want? They got to want something. there's got to be a request coming right here sometime soon. And I know God doesn't think that, yeah. you know, but still we're full of wants.
Yeah.
And sometimes we're not really full of just being a person, mm-hmm. letting God be a person and us being a person and enjoying who he is. And it's really hard to think in terms of this, but he must really enjoy who we are, or he wouldn't have made us in the first place.
Amen. Gary, we're all rushing around. We've got a couple days before Christmas here. We're all rushing around trying to buy presents. What was the significance of the gifts brought to Jesus when he was born?
Yeah, of course. Now that story, so the birth story is in Luke chapter 2. But the wise guys showing up, mm-hmm. the Magi, the Magi, they show up in Matthew chapter 2. And they brought three gifts. Now, we usually say there's three guys because of the three gifts. But we have no idea. I imagine there was more than three traveling in a caravan across the desert. So gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Gold, of course, is a metal. Frankincense and myrrh are vegetable material. They're both used in incense. And, in fact, frankincense means fine incense. And then they were used for other purposes, and including burials and funerals for folks. And in fact, frankincense and myrrh were so special that they had higher value even than gold did. Because gold was much more plentiful, believe it or not, than frankincense or myrrh. So they were really special gifts. These wise guys, and however much they brought, I doubt they even had a lot, but what they had some of each, and that was a wonderful gift. People have suggested some symbolism to those gifts, and maybe so, but they gave Jesus the best they had.
The best they had. And then when you talk about myrrh, that shows up in the Gospels at the crucifixion.
Yes, yes. And frankincense, the idea of incense as prayers, and of course gold for a king.
Yeah. What's important right now for us, tied up in just going crazy? Larissa is a very organized human being.
She is.
And I know you're organizing the Lusco family, which is, well, you have like 27 grandchildren now. What?
Not quite. There's a lot, though.
There's a bunch.
Yeah, and what a joy, huh?
Oh, it's amazing. The grandkids, no one ever warns you. They're the best.
They're the best. My dad told me he was really blessed whenever he had grandchildren because he could give those back.
Some truth to that.
So the greats. I didn't know you had greats. You're not old enough to have greats.
No greats. No greats yet. No greats yet.
Just grands.
Yes.
But that's special enough. So Larissa, how do you get past all the organization and the pomp and circumstance and really just sit down and have that conversation we were talking about earlier with God and say thank you. Thank you for your son. Thank you for the sacrifice Jesus made for us. Is that hard?
Well, I've incorporated in my life just, you know, scripture talks about praying without ceasing. And so I just continue throughout the day with this open line, this ongoing conversation of driving in my car. I don't usually, you're not going to like this, but I don't usually have my radio on. I will just drive in silence.
That
and
is
I
sacrilege.
Just converse with the Lord. Especially my husband's industry, right?
Yes.
But I converse with the Lord, and it is just this ongoing conversation where I pick up where I left off, and in the morning is my prayer and supplication and thanksgiving, and throughout the day is conversation. It's just...
Many times when I drive, people that are driving around me open their windows and shout things about the Lord at me that are not particularly friendly.
Yeah, I've seen you drive. I agree.
Oh, man. Well, I'm still just amazed at how different the actual biblical story is. And I'm embarrassed to say that I haven't evaluated the actual text of Scripture enough to really pay attention to what the truth is. And we're not just talking about, you know, the story of the birth of Jesus. We're talking about the crucifixion of Jesus. We're talking about the life of Jesus. We're talking about the 30 plus years that he spent on this earth and the example that he was and the sinless life that he led. I've talked to God many times and said, Lord, I don't want to lose my temper ever again. 30 seconds later, I leave church, I get in my car, somebody cuts in front of me, and oops, I've already blown it. But that's really why he died, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, we can do our best, try to walk with God, not sin. Those are choices. It's all choices, but sometimes our brain or our emotions get ahead of us, and we do things before we really process it. And but hey, God understands that. The thing is, at the moment of creation, everything that was ever going to exist, ever going to live, every word that was ever going to be said, every event that was ever going to happen, existed from the moment of creation. When God created it, his experience of it was not historical like ours, was not linear and historical. His experience of reality is its entirety. That's why the Bible can say he was crucified from the foundation of the world, that our names are written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, that we have been elect from the foundation of the world, because everything exists. You know, history does play out. People are born, people die, events happen, history rolls on. But that's from our linear three-dimensional idea of reality. That's our experience. That's not God's experience. Mm-hmm. So God knows everything there is, including every sin everybody's ever going to commit in all of history, mine included. God's not surprised by anything. That's why he did what he did. The consummation of the ages, according to Paul, is not the end of time. It's the crucifixion of Jesus. Now, once at the consummation of the ages, God sent forth his son, born of a woman, and to be crucified for our sins. God took care of it. God created from the beginning, and he took care of it. He's the lamb slain from the foundation of the world. God created it, and he took care of it from the beginning. Sin, the fall of humanity, was not something that caught God off guard. Oh no, the whole idea of the coming of Messiah was not God's last ditch effort to save a creation gone sour. He created, one might say, in order to die. It was his act of creation was also his act of self-sacrifice, because from the moment of creation, he sacrificed himself on the cross. Now, it's hard for us to comprehend that because we're only locked in three dimensions. But God did some pretty neat stuff. You know, he's never caught off guard. He's never off kilter. He's never back on his heels. He's got it all under control. COVID included. Listen, COVID was reality from the foundation of the world.
Merry Christmas. Yeah. Thank you for sharing today. And I just hope you guys have a great time with your families. Thank you.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling. For service, call 504-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling. Locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at
abqconnect.online.